Avi Adoni Dodi. We enter into this study to draw close to you for the sake of holy service and the fulfillment of your will for us and for all of Israel and for this entire planet. Please assist our efforts and guide our understandings. Let us internalize your Torah to the depths of our being so that we become transformed by your will and its truths. Let neither ourselves nor anyone else come into stumbling as a result of this study. Ga'enai va'abita nifla'ot me'toratecha. Okay, so we're moving through these halachot on the prohibitions of not hating your brother or sister or countrymen in your heart, not taking revenge, and not holding a grudge. And we've kind of done the first two, more or less, of not hating your neighbor or whatever in your heart, and kind of looked at what does that mean, your brother or your neighbor, and what does it mean to hate, and all that stuff. So we kind of covered that material pretty completely. And now we're finishing up with the issue of revenge. And I mean, the basic bottom line is that whole tendency of tit for tat has to be uprooted in our hearts, and that we have an obligation. So the prototype of revenge that the text gives is, if someone comes and asks, if you come and ask to borrow something from someone, I want to borrow your axe, and they say, no, I don't lend it out. And then they come the next day or sometime in the future and they ask to borrow your hoe. And you say, no, I'm not going to give you my hoe. You didn't give me your axe. It's like, forget it. So that's called revenge. And that's a very kind of neutral or kind of simple example of it. But it actually includes like the most extreme situation, it says, which is, so the offense, the original offense that might provoke a desire for revenge could either be a passive, which it was in this story the example that I just gave, a passive offense of refusing to give, to bestow, or to share a certain good, or it could be an active offense, like the person actually hurting or insulting or causing one some kind of loss, monetary loss or whatever. And so the incentive for revenge in an active situation would be even greater than the incentive for revenge in a passive situation. But either way, it's essentially forbidden. There is a qualifier, which is that if the offense was something that caused, that was an insult or a humiliation that caused real psychic pain or physical pain, then there is the permissibility, so to speak, of avenging, quote unquote, avenging that through some kind of passive means. Even though the original offense was active, the rabbis are kind of dealing with this tension of kind of the spiritual ideal versus like what can really realistically be expected from a human heart. And so that's kind of where here it is, like acknowledging that that completely forgiving that kind of offense, an offense that caused real psychic pain and also or some kind of material loss, completely forgiving that when there hasn't been any apology or anything like that, is in some sense too much to expect from a person. And so it, the rabbis, the halachic system makes some space for a person to just close down, close their heart a little to that person, and to kind of refrain, like, so, but the revenge isn't an act, even though the offense was active, the revenge, to whatever extent it is permissible, is only a more passive revenge, meaning a refusal to share some kind of good or whatever. And also, it needs to be proportional. It can't be like of cause, you know, it can't create a bigger deal than the original offense. But because that is so difficult to measure, proportionality, so, and because we're dealing, the rabbis say, because we're dealing with a actual Torah level offense, like these prohibitions, the prohibition against hating in your heart and revenging and grudging are Torah level offenses. They're not rabbinic, they're Torah level. The rabbis are unpacking them and telling us what they're entailed. But as we talked about last week, that Safek de'oraita lechumra is a basic rule of halacha, which is that when you're dealing with the possibility of transgressing, there's two principles that kind of work together. One is Safek de'oraita lechumra, and Safek de'rabanan lekula, meaning that if there is a question of transgressing a Torah level offense, then you add offense to make sure that that doesn't happen. In other words, hold by the more stringent opinion in such a case, if there's any possibility that it would, in anything less than that, might cross a Torah level red line. Whereas if you're dealing with a rabbinic, just you're not supposed to say just a rabbinic law, but that is the effect of it. Like if you're dealing with a rabbinic law, then if there is some kind of, I think that I can't remember what example I gave, but say like the Torah itself gives us the obligation to say Birchat HaMazon, the blessing after a meal, when you've eaten bread. And so that's a Torah level offense. So if a person can't remember, it seems outrageous, but anyway, if a person can't remember whether they've actually said their Birchat HaMazon, because it's a Torah level offense, they should say it again. And even though there is the danger of taking Hashem's name in vain because they really actually said the bracha earlier, but because it's a Torah level thing, you say it again. Whereas in all the other blessings that we say, like the morning blessings and the blessings before eating food and all those are rabbinic level halachot. And so if we can't remember whether we said one of those blessings or not, we hold by the lenient opinion and we don't repeat. We don't say it again just in case, because we are in danger of violating a Torah level commandment of not taking Hashem's name in vain. So also here, because we're dealing with a Torah level offense of revenge, of prohibition against revenge and grudge, so and that if we, which are only permissible if in the circumstance that I mentioned, and if the act of revenge is proportional. And because it's so difficult to weigh proportionality, even though there is the space to allow some kind of vengeful act in those circumstances, the rabbis say it's better not to do it, because it's just too precarious measuring this issue of proportionality. So that's where we left off last week. Does anybody have any questions or comments about that? Elena? You're muted.
One clarification. When you, there was an example that was brought up about the withholding of food. And I just wasn't sure whether withholding food from someone who's hungry is active or passive.
It's passive. It said it's like the most extreme form of passive.
Active, okay.
Yeah.
And then the question that I have is about Esav and proportionality. So it's like in this week's Parsha, upcoming Parsha Toldot, would you say that in this model, Esav would be entitled to want to take revenge on Yaakov?
Because it was...
Although your videos...
Would you... Oh, my video's off. Let's see. You mean because of the blessing being stolen and the monetary or significant loss that he suffered as a result of that? Well, yes and no. I mean, it's like not it would still have to be a passive revenge. It would like it's not. It wouldn't it, like the halacha is that you can't take active revenge even if you're. If the original offense was an active offense, you can only do passive, like a kind of more withdrawn.
Like you wouldn't say that he's entitled to revenge.
Like he's entitled to passive revenge proportional.
Not to kill.
Right, right, right. Or to harm physically in any way. Okay, so I'm going to share a screen and we're going to start on Oat, paragraph Yud. Let's see. Which is on the bottom of the page here. Okay, so Yesh Nekama Shehu B'Shav Va'alta Aseh. So there's an even super passive way of taking revenge. Kate Saad, how do you what does it mean? Like it's shav ba'al ta'aseh means one who sits and doesn't do, meaning passive revenge. Kate Saad, what does it mean here? So Reuven harea lishimon. So Reuven does something hurtful to Shimon. Uba Levi Laharea Leruvain. And Levi comes. It's not clear here whether Levi has his own problem with Reuven that he's kind of addressing, or whether he's coming in loyalty to Shimon, who was hurt by Reuven, and he's taking it upon himself to mete out justice. That's not clear to me, and I don't think it'll be clear to you. I don't think it'll be clear further on either. But so we have a person A who's been hurt by a person B, and a person C comes and is aiming to hurt the person A who was the herder of person B. Ve'im Shimon eno moche, and if Shimon, the one that was hurt by person A, and somehow knows what Levi, person C, what's better? Should I use the names or A, B, and C? What's easier for you? Does it matter?
A, B, and C.
A, B, and C. Okay. So if person B, who's the one that was hurt by person A, eno moche, he doesn't protest and try to stop Levi and warn person, doesn't stop person C or warn person A, but al yedei ze no kem mimenu, and as a result of his not warning or protesting, the person A, the one who hurt person B, is now like it's a way of person B getting revenge by knowing that hurt is going to come to person A and not trying to stop that in some way. That's also, it's a passive way, but it's a passive way of getting some revenge. Vaharese over below takum. So the rabbis are telling us that that is still, that's prohibited, that's forbidden, meaning that person B is obligated to somehow try to stop the situation. And if they don't, they're guilty of taking revenge, violating the mitzvah of not taking revenge. Ela chayav Shimon lahit nahe klape Ruvain ke'ilu lo chata lo klau. That really, person B is obligated to relate to person A, the one that hurt them, is obligated to relate to person A as if that person had not caused them any harm. Lo chata lo klau. Vizot hanikama shehutra lefi hayeshomrim bahalachatet bimkom shetziar tziara ad shemargish tsar haguf. However, this would be permissible in that circumstance that was mentioned in the closing of last week's class, where if a person caused such harm to the point that a person was just psychically pained by it, or physically or monetarily suffered loss, then they are able to take passive revenge. So this would be included in that. And under those circumstances, person B would not be obligated to warn person A of some kind of impending harm that was coming their way. She'im Ruvain charaf ubiza leshimon, that if person A insulted and humiliated person B, ein leshimon liyakech din mishpat nikmato befoel. Person B is not allowed to take the law into their own hands, so to speak, and execute active revenge against person A. Omnam im levi ba v'liyakek nikmato meruvein mutar leshimon lishtok ve'ein tzarich limchot. But if another person C, is coming to take revenge against person A, it is permissible for person B, the one that was hurt by person A, to just not say anything, to just be quiet and let things unfold as they will, which is probably to person A's harm or discomfort. Omnam, im nikmat levi yet sa'er yoter tsar yoter mimashet si'er ruvein leshimon asur leshimon lishtok ele chayav limchot. But the qualifier, which is kind of the same thing that we talked about earlier, is the limitation, the limiting factor of proportionality. And so if person B knows that person C is going to harm person A to a degree that is greater than the harm that was done to themselves, to person B, then person B would be obligated to try to warn person A, their the one who hurt them, would be obligated to warn them or to protest person C and try to stop the impending hurt or loss.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So this is actually, I think, going back to the most recent section, but I'm curious about where the idea of setting a boundary with someone would fit in here. For example, I have a friend who just asks for, you know, favor after favor after favor. Mm-hmm. And it's yesterday I said, well, I'm just don't want to do that anymore, meaning one thing in particular. And she's like, where is this coming from? you know, it just felt like too much. And in telling someone else about it, she said, well, it sounds like you were setting a boundary. And that seems pretty innocuous, or, you know, relatively harmless. But anyway, so I was trying to stand up for myself. I wasn't able to put that into words at the time.
Right. So it's a good thing to set boundaries. And as we talked about last week, like in the section about not hating your neighbor in your heart, that one of the recommendations is to speak to the person and to say, you know, this is how I'm feeling, and this is what hurt, and this is what feels too much. And, you know, this is how I'm going to proceed from this point on. No, you know, no hard feelings, just I need to set a boundary here. This is what I can do. And this is what I can't do. And it's not, I'm not, you know, there's no vengeance there, and there's no grudge holding there. It's just, this is the limits of my time and my generosity in this circumstance.
And my koyach.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to go on to Yud Aleph if nobody has anything to say. So we're moving out of revenge into grudge.
So didn't you say something last week about if A insults B, B is able to talk to A to express how they felt about the whatever the hurt was?
Exactly. Not even able to, but it's advised that's the ideal step to take, is to really just talk it through and explain how it felt and ask, you know, why. And it's also like, I mean, this is the part that was a little bit confusing to me is that, like, sometimes someone does something, and as a result of that, it becomes clear that they're not so trustworthy as a friend, you know, like, and so you need to be able to, it's not really taking revenge or holding a grudge, but, you know, it might change the extent to which one wants to kind of carry on, like how much intimacy one is wanting to share with that person, given what they've now seen. And that's, I think the only difference between grudge and not grudge is somehow the motivation, the sincerity of motivation that a person is kind of bringing to the table there somehow.
It's interesting because I have that exact situation this past week, so this is all really helpful. Uh-huh. And if B talks to A, and A, you know, hears them, but in the apology, it's not really an apology. Like, mm-hmm. A's not really taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Then it's talked about longer, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. What are you saying? It's talked about longer. What do you mean by that?
A says hurts B. Mm-hmm. Says to A, you hurt me.
Right.
Feel good. And A says, I'm sorry you were hurt. Mm-hmm. Right. Really take responsibility.
Right.
And so then B says that didn't feel like an apology. You know, it didn't really touch my heart. Mm-hmm. And then A gets angry.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you know, the reality is Hashem doesn't forgive us until we do our tshuva, and Hashem doesn't accept our tshuva until it's a real tshuva, meaning that it touches the place that was wronged, so to speak, both in our own soul and in Hashem's soul, so to speak, or our relationship with Hashem. So, you know, I don't think that I'm sure that we're not obligated to just stay open to a relationship just because it once was a more open relationship. Like as the relationship evolves and changes and new, you know, information becomes available, or, you know, things that test the relationship, like it's legitimate for a person to decide that they kind of want to pull back a bit from that relationship, so and that has to be possible without it kind of crossing the line into holding a grudge,
and right.
I do think that one of the ways to assure that that's so is to, as you said, to just be forthcoming to whatever. I mean, he acknowledged that there are certain situations and people and relationships where it's just not going to work. People aren't available for any kind of quote unquote rebuke or kind of just facing the uncomfortable feelings. It makes many people nervous. So it's not always possible, but ideally that's, I think, the way to move on from a relationship is to kind of try to be as forthright as possible about what's happening.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so kol hanoter la'achad me'Yisrael over b'lo ta'aseh she'ne'amar lo tatur et b'nei amecha. So anyone who is holding a grudge against a fellow landsman, is transgressing a negative prohibition of the Torah, the prohibition that says you shall not hold a grudge against your fellow Jew. Ketzad haya hanatira. So what does this entail? Like, what does it mean holding a grudge? So it brings a variation on the last mashal or example. Ruvein amar l'Shimon, hascher li beit bayit zeh, v'lo ratza Shimon, liyamim ba Shimon, l'Ruvein lish'ol mimenu o lischar mimenu, v'amar lo Ruvein ha lecha, hareini mash ilcha ve'eni kamotcha lo eshalem lecha kamasecha. Okay, so what does it mean, a grudge? So Shimon comes and asks to borrow something from person B, or no, asks to borrow something or to wait. I just skipped the point. I'm looking at the wrong lines. Okay, sorry. So how does this happen? So Reuven, person A says to person B, will you rent me this house, your house, or this house that you have for sale? I mean, you have for rent. And person A says, no, I don't want to rent to you. And then sometime days, months down the line, person A now comes to person, I mean, person B now, I don't know. It's, Shimon comes to Reuven and asks if he can borrow now, if Shimon will lend him, either rent a house, rent something to him, or lend something to him. And Shimon says, yeah, I will do that. Not like you, who didn't rent me the house last month. So it's just a, like he like revenge would be where he refuses to rent or to lend the thing to the person who refused him. But here he does it, but he does it with a like little jab of reminder that I'm not like you who was selfish, and I'm going to be generous, and I'm going to rent this to you.
I'm sorry. What about if someone says, yes, I will rent the house to you like in 2 months or whatever. And then when the time comes, they've decided to rent it to someone else. And they say, oh, sorry, changed my mind.
Right. So that, well, that's not revenge, but it is like not being true to your word, which is a whole other problem, is that we are obligated to, like, our words are kind of verbal contracts in a certain way. I mean, halakhically, it's not so simple. Like, technically, we're not obligated to our word for the in large part, unless there's some written document. But it's one of those things where technically you're not, but actually you do have a halachic obligation to hold by your word. But it's not, the problem wouldn't be this. It's not in the realm of grudge and revenge.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Okay, the ha'osek is a over below tatur. Ella yimcha hadavar milibo velo yitreno. So instead, the person should really just just purge from their heart that resentment for having been refused when they asked to borrow or to rent something from person A. Shekolzman shehu noter et hadavar shema yavo linkom. And part of the reason for the problem with holding a grudge is that it's likely to turn into revenge. That's kind of what it's saying here, that as long as a person is holding a grudge, they're also in danger of crossing the line and kind of taking revenge in some way or another. Lefikach hakpida Torah al hanetira ad sheyimcha ha'avon milibo v'lo yischarenu klal. And therefore, the Torah is particular to kind of emphasize and to create another mitzvah of prohibiting revenge in order to sheyim chehavon melibo velo yischarenu klal, to kind of insist that actually the remembrance of this, like the resentment and the remembering of that resentment, should as much as possible be just purged from the heart. It's going to say something very interesting about this in a minute. And so that a person really out of sight, out of mind. Isur hanitirahu belev. And so the prohibition of grudge is in the heart. It's a heart action. Lefikach afilu lo amar lo klum ela shamar ha eva belibo over belo tatur. And therefore, even if the person doesn't say that to the, like, I'm going to lend this to you, not like you did to me, even if they don't say it, but they're thinking it, and it's still alive and well and active in their heart, then they are still, like, they have that animus in their heart. They are still, they are violating the prohibition of not holding a grudge. Okay, so this is very interesting, number 13. Eno over below tatur, b'sha'at ma'aseh. So this whole idea of grudge doesn't really apply in the time that it's, sha'at ma'aseh is the time when it's happening, but here's, it's gonna explain that. Ketzad, so what does this mean? Ruven chata l'Shimon. So person A does something like does something hurtful to person B. V'Shimon margish eva b'libo, and person B feels a resentment in their heart. Eino over b'lo tatur. De ikar kavanata Torah hi sheyavod Shimon al atzmo lahasiach dato min ha'eva ad shelo yargish ha'eva klal. So the essential ikar kavanata Torah. So the essential intention of the Torah in terms of this kind of grievance and grudge, it is. The point, what the Torah is trying to bring us to, it is Shia avod Shimon al atzmo, that the Torah wants us to work on ourselves, to just have the, like, to not, to be honest with ourselves, that we actually are resentful and we do feel begrudging around towards person A, and we know that we're not supposed to. And so we're trying to work it through. We're trying la'avod Shimon al atzmo lahasiach dato min ha'eva, that we're trying to find a way to let it go and to focus on other things and to, like, not ruminate on that, our resentment here. Ad shelo yargish ha'eva klal, and eventually, hopefully, we'll be able to wash it through. V'kol zman she'oved al atzmo, and as long as a person is working on themselves, maybe it takes years, but as long as they're working on themselves, limchota avon milibo, eno over belo tatur. As long as they are working on themselves and trying to clean their heart and wash it through, then they are not. Even though they haven't succeeded, and every time they think about that person, they feel like angry and are whole, you know, negative and grudging about them. Nevertheless, they aren't guilty of the prohibition of holding a grudge. I mean, it's a very,
that's a relief.
Yeah, I know. And it's very, it has a wisdom to, I mean, it's like, you know, I think it's a beautiful, like, way of kind of holding the tension between just the reality of a human heart and the ideal that the Torah is, you know, kind of trying to convey to us.
It also seems that it would help you to move a grudge. So if you assume that this other person is working on themselves, like, you have to make this assumption that everyone in a Torah world is doing this work, even though they haven't gotten there, like you haven't gotten there. Uh-huh. There is something that helps move it that way. Like, I can't understand person A. I don't know why they did it. And there's not, I don't know. It's just, it's a beautiful piece. Like, uh-huh. It's a beautiful idea.
Uh-huh. Right. Right. And there is, as you're saying, there is a the mitzvah, there is an idea that the mitzvah itself helps you fulfill it. So if you are trying, then you have your own, muscle strength, and psychic strength, but you also have an assistance from heavenly assistance, since your striving is toward the fulfillment of a mitzvah. Were you going to say something, Batya? Did you start to say something?
No, I was just going to ask you to point to what you just read in the Hebrew, because I'm following you, and then I somehow lost completely where it was in the Hebrew.
Okay, so I'm in Yud Gimel.
Okay.
Right, I just read the first three lines, and I'm here. Can you see my cursor? V'kein, v'kozman, third line down.
V'kozman. Okay, I have you. Yeah. Yep.
V'kozman she'oved al atzmo limchot ha'avo melibo eno over belotatur. That's what I just read. And so as long as that person is working on themselves and trying to kind of overcome their grudge and resentments, they are not, even though they feel resentful and grudging, they are not guilty. They haven't transgressed the prohibition of not holding a grudge, because they're actively trying to work it through. Ve'im hasiach dato mela avod alatzmo, ela nishar ha'avon tamun belibo, hareze shomer venoter eta avod v'tekef over below tatur. So whereas if a person, stops, stops trying to work it through, but they haven't worked it through, and they just, and so the resentment remains like kind of hidden or embedded in their heart, they are at that and they're kind of nursing, they've given up trying to let it go, and they're kind of nursing their resentment in a certain way, or at least indulging it in some way by not trying to be rid of it. So therefore they then do cross that line into now being guilty of violating the prohibition of not holding a grudge. Okay, Yudala, does anybody have anything they want to say about that before me?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay.
This is good stuff.
Yeah. it is.
So let's say, is it incumbent upon us, like if let's say somebody does something and you realize, this person doesn't feel like somebody I want to have up close in my life,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it incumbent upon us to say something to them as to why, or...
I think that's like kind of depends situationally. Like if there's someone that was close and now, like if you know that, like if you're honest with yourself, that they're kind of trying to figure out what happened to you and where'd you go, then I don't know. I think it's a very personal thing, but I think that it would be, and I guess you have to decide what's going to be more hurtful or less hurtful or whatever, but I mean, oftentimes people would rather know what's going on, even if it's going to hurt to hear it, than to just be having to guess why someone kind of pulled away.
I think
the thing about it is too, like in the don't hate the person in your heart, and Sefer Achinuch says one of the ways to get around that is to tell them that you hate them. But I mean, but more like kind of there's this idea of just raising the issue, because you might find out that you misread something or they misread, you know, like kind of all kinds of things can get cleared up in the by of that that conversation. So yeah,
I have one thought to that, Abby. Mm-hmm. And that is that, at least in my own experience, you know, actions that I've done either in often unintentionally, sometimes what have you, is that to the person who's causing offense, it's not the person themselves, but their actions, and to separate that out.
Mm-hmm.
Because to wholesale make somebody bad rather than just certain actions, there's the option for them to understand that you're not writing them off, you're writing off certain actions.
Right. Anybody else have anything they wanna? Okay. So you don't. Someone say something? No. Okay.
The only thing I was gonna say is that, and also it offers a possibility that there can be growth in,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if they didn't know that, although it's interesting, you would think people would ask, right? But and it's
vulnerable. It's a vulnerable thing to ask.
Yeah, true. I kind of left it in that court. Like if they really wanted to know why I pulled away, they would ask me. Mm-hmm. And I'm presenting the possibility of growth and learning too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. For me too. Growth for me too in that process. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a good point that it's vulnerable to
mm-hmm.
ask.
Mm-hmm. It seems like the person who's pulled away is less vulnerable than the person who's been pulled away from. And so there's more of a,
right.
Yeah.
Compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Izahera dame od beisur nitira. So a person should be very careful about this mitzvah of not holding a grudge, given that it's just the ego keeps score, you know. It just is, keeps track of flattery and insult, check, just, you know, it's constantly making assessments. And so, and it resents insults. And so it's so difficult to not, you know, to really just be clean of all this. Shafilu natan lo chafetz ach lo hisbir lo sever panim yafot me machmat shechatalo. Oh, right. So this is him. Okay. And so even if you give someone a gift, this person that you're feeling resentful towards, even if you give them a gift, but you don't smile, you would smile if nothing had happened. Hasbir lo sever panim yafot machmat shechata. If you don't, you know, give them a kind smiling face like you would if nothing had happened, o lo yitnahegimo lagamre keilu lo chatalo, or you don't behave towards them exactly like you would had nothing happened, hare adayan shomer ha'avon belibo, there is still something in your heart that is, that has the status of grudge, va'over belav delo tator, and so you are violating this Torah level commandment. She'im ein havon tamun belibo hare yitnaheg etzlo ke'ilu lo chata lo klal. Because if you really weren't holding some kind of grudge and resentment, then like hidden in your heart somewhere, then you would be able to behave to this person, toward this person, as if nothing had happened and mean it. Va'ad she'agia la'madrega zot chayav la'avod al atzmo. And until you get to that point, you have to keep working on yourself. You have to make it a practice of, you know, I mean, one of the things that I try to do when I, you know, am kind of feeling negativity towards someone is kind of whenever I notice myself kind of going into that loop, I have this little thing that I say, which is, Hashem, please bring light and love and joy and peace to that person and to the place inside me that feels angry or resentful or hurt or judged or whatever it is by them. And it's a way of at least succeeding in being working on it, even if I can't necessarily succeed in uprooting it.
Can you say that again?
So Hashem, please bring light and love and joy and peace to this person. I'll say their name, and to the place inside me that feels hurt or resentful or judged or I don't know, mistreated by them. Like fill in the blank. Yeah, and it helps. I mean, at least because it's also, you know, it says, Hashem says to Avram, Tiye bracha, you should be a blessing. And so, you know, the thoughts, it's really true that the thoughts we carry about people, they do, we're people that have spent a lot of years on a spiritual path. And one of the things that happens is that your thoughts get powerful. Like your soul becomes empowered by that commitment and that practice and that growth. And so negative thoughts really, they do impact the people that are the objects of those. And so to try to like be a blessing rather than a hurt, a curse to people by as soon as you notice like the negative thought becomes a trigger to say a blessing for them and for you. And I think it's important, I find it important to cover both of those bases, like not just bless them, but also bless a place in me that is feeling the resentment towards them or holding the grudge towards them.
So I'm glad you said the word resentment, because the example I gave before of this friend who I was trying to set a boundary with, I realized later that I do have a resentment that I've been holding against her for quite some time, you know, at least several months, and which I never, you know, and at the time I said, I tried to set another boundary. I said, no, you know, I helped you these 2 days. I'm not going to help you the third day. Mm-hmm. And she ignored it basically and said, well, when can you help me? What time, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I did it, but that was a, you know, that created a resentment that I held on to. Mm-hmm. So that's helpful. I like the idea of saying a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
For them and for me.
Right.
It's also nice because it feels like by putting it in a halachic or a mitzvah context, you break this dynamic of victim consciousness kind of thing. Like someone's the victim and someone is the aggressor. Mm-hmm. And it takes the a positive movement and kind of way, like you're just doing your tshuva.
Mm-hmm.
you know, because there is a very big helpless feeling when you're overtaken by resentment one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You're helpless to how you feel or what's been done to you, or someone turns away and you feel desperate, or you mm-hmm. can't handle some, whatever it is. So it's a nice, you know, it just keeps the tshuva process very present mm-hmm. as an active thing. So mm-hmm. I find it very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right. That me? Yeah. I mean, that is the thing, is that it is like, you can't just say, I don't want this resentment, like zap it out of existence. It just doesn't happen that way. It's kind of, it's humbling. Okay. Let's see. Okay. So, right. So, So until a person is done with it, so they just need to be working on it, and la'at la'at, like little by little by little by little, it's saying the heart, it becomes possible to, like, time heals, distance heals, like efforts heal, and little by little it kind of leaves the heart. Vehine isur nekama v'netira min hakashim me'od shebetorah l'kayim. And so this is very validating, is that it says that these two prohibitions, the prohibition against revenge and grudge, are two of the hardest mitzvot in the Torah to fulfill, to l'kayim, to fulfill. Sheha nekama Metuka midvash, as Kohelet says, revenge is as sweet as honey. Omnam gezerat melechi, but you know, what can we do? Hashem, the King of Kings, told us we can't do it. We can't taste that honey. We can't partake of that honey, the honey of revenge and grudge. Va'aleinu la'avor al atzmenu l'kayim ha'mitzvah. And we have to just let it go and work it through in order to fulfill this mitzvah. Kol sha'asur b'lo takum asur b'lo tatur. And basically the same parameters that apply in the laws of revenge that we did last week also apply to the laws of grudge. V'ladat rishonat sa'if tet afilu bizehu v'cherpo k'shem she'over alav b'lo takum kein over b'lo tatur. And that even in a situation where a person shames or humiliates you, in the same way that one she'over alav b'lo takum, that there applies the prohibition against not taking revenge in that circumstance, so there applies the prohibition against not holding a grudge. Ketzad, what does that mean? How does that go? Lo yitur ha'avon, you shall not grudge the wrong that was done to you. Yesh lo lehitbonen shekol divr, like how, so, but how do you get to a place where you can let that go? And I think there's a difference between forgiving and holding a grudge somehow, which we need to talk about. But Yeshlo Lahitbonen, so he's giving us some advice about how to frame the situation that might make it easier or possible to fulfill the mitzvah, which is let's see, Ketzad Lo Yatur. Yeshlo Lahitbonen, Shekol Divrei Haolam, Hem Hevel Uvahavai. Ve'enan kedai linkom alehem. that first of all, to put things in perspective and to meditate on the fact that really vanity of vanities, really, that all, like all worldly things, they're temporal, they're going to, they have no eternally enduring presence and impact. The soul is eternal. These circumstances are temporal. Havai means like kind of foolish, kind of. Ve'eno kadai linkom aleim, and so it just isn't worth your while. This is there's a story about the Baal Shem Tov. I'll try to find it for next week, where he's like talks about like someone like, because he was, you know, oftentimes the front of the misnagdim that would really cause him harm and also humiliation and all that kind of stuff, and he talks of like, well, his students are kind of wondering how he is, you know, just seems to be able to just let things go, like it just water off a duck's back. And he says something about like that, whatever that satisfaction of revenge or whatever is so not worth the loss of that moment of dveikut that he would have to kind of let go of in order to, be vengeful. Like there's something, he has access to this channel of just sweet dveikut with Hashem, cleaving to Hashem. And it just like seems like, you know, the loss doesn't outweighs the anticipated gain of that, the honey of revenge, so to speak. Let's see, where am I? Eino kadai lin kumala. Umaya ase adam sha chasra lo hatvuna hazot. And what should a person do if they have, like, kind of, they can't really hold that perspective? Vahare margish elbono shenifka, and they really do feel like they've been wounded by this insult that they experienced. Yeshlo lahitbonen shekol ma she'ira lo hakol hu min hashamayim. That in that case, then a person needs to understand that really nothing can happen to him or her that Hashem hasn't signed off on. That somehow the only way that hurtful thing or insulting thing was able to get through and cause its damage or wound is because Hashem somehow deemed that was an ordeal that we needed to suffer in our path of personal and spiritual development, that our next step required us to grapple with that hurt.
Right.
That seems dangerous.
Right. I mean, it is kind of, I was thinking about that as I was reading it, but it's also like, if you have a legitimate complaint, then it doesn't mean that you shouldn't take the person to court or call the police or, you know, do whatever you can do in order to make sure that justice is done. And so you kind of are working with it on both a horizontal and a vertical level. Like on a horizontal level, if you have a case or if you have, if some like literally injustice was done. So you can rebuke the person, you can take them to court, you can press charges, call the police, do whatever you need to do. But even so, there is like kind of behind it all, there is Hashem there somehow communicating. Every moment is a communication between Hashem and our soul. And so we do have to work it through on that level as well.
Maybe I'm interpreting what you just said to the most extreme, where there a person has no, let's say the person making the offense has no will, the interpretation, but that's not what you're saying. Basically people do what they're inclined to do, and Hashem lets them do what they're inclined to do. But it's not like Hashem, it's troubling to me that Hashem would allow serious offenses, really serious offenses, that there's authorship behind that. I don't think so.
Well, so it's definitely not saying, like, people are accountable to their deeds, and that person is going to have to pay their full, like, karmic debt for what mm-hmm. they did. And nevertheless, there is the idea that every moment is a communication between Hashem and my soul, and somehow that is like Hashem let that through, and that my personal and spiritual development requires that I need to somehow find the most spiritually productive way to deal with this mm-hmm. ordeal. But it's not, nobody's off the hook. That person is not off the hook. And okay. There's a story of a rabbi who kind of came into a ruin and saw a man dead and another man like holding a knife with blood dripping from it. And it says that he, I don't know, I'm not like butchering the story, but it says that he cursed the man because he wouldn't have, with only one witness, he would never have been able to convict him. And so he, like, in a situation where you can't, like, that person is clearly guilty of a heinous crime, and you can't call the police, and you can't take them, for whatever reasons, you can't take them to court. So there even is the space to try to use whatever power you have at your disposal, which is curse, which seems like curse would be the ultimate of taking revenge. But it's like somehow there is in that circumstance when it should be a prosecutable offense, but because of the idiosyncrasies of the circumstances, you don't have a case, but the person really did. So, there's even the space for that in a certain way.
I heard a wonderful saying way back that I've lived by, that it goes like this: the best revenge is a well-lived life.
Right. That is true too. When I was reading it, I was thinking, like religion is the opiate of people, like kind of too much emphasis on, everything's a mirror and I'm the cause of everything and Hashem is doing everything. And, it can take away the incentive, the revolutionary incentive that is also important. So there does need to be a balance of those, but it is also true that that every moment is a communication between Hashem and our soul. And we do have to kind of work things through on that level as well. I think we're out of time and over time. So
thank you. This is great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With pleasure. Okay. So okay. Have a great week.
Have a good week.
Bye-bye.
Wonderful week. Bye.
Stop sharing.